This is the first ever episode of this podcast, and I am so excited. I've been wanting to do this for so long, and we're finally here. Welcome to the Untapped Potential Podcast, where we talk about healing from BFRBs, which are body-focused repetitive behaviors like chronic skin picking, hair pulling, nail biting, and sheep biting. I'm honestly kind of unsure of how to start this because I've never done this before, but let's just dive into it. I am a dermatillomania coach, and everything that I'm going to be sharing with you is things that I've learned on my own healing journey, things that I've learned through speaking to countless people in the BFRB community, and through helping them heal from skin picking or hair pulling or any BFRB. I don't want to keep you waiting, so let's dive into the first ever topic, which is the origins of skin picking. Where did it come from? Why did we end up with this behavioral addiction? And just so you know, I refer to all BFRBs as behavioral addiction, and that's how I approach them. Which, if you've been following me for a while or you already know me, you know my methods and my style, then you'll get it. Otherwise, you're going to learn throughout this podcast what I mean. When we understand where skin picking comes from, it becomes really clear that it is actually something that is possible to heal from. So BFRBs are behavioral addictions. They're there to help us soothe ourselves. They give us a sense of relief. They make us feel calm. They give us a respite in the chaos. And that's what a lot of people report, is they go into this trance-like state. Or while they're in the session, they feel a sense of calm and peace that they don't normally experience. And this is because we are getting a hit of dopamine while we're engaging the behavior. And that's what makes the behavior so addictive. It's this dopamine, and our brain, subconsciously, we know that's what we're going to get when we engage in this behavior, which is why we continue to do it, because that instant soothing and release and relief and that break that we get from the internal external chaos of our lives is very much needed. And it's needed because we didn't learn other ways to deal with that internal and external chaos. We didn't learn healthier ways to deal with the emotions that create that chaos, that anxiety and stress and the overwhelm. We learned that the BFRB that we have is the fastest and easiest way to soothe. And I'm just asking myself, how deep do we want to go? Because there's so many different avenues. There's so many different ways we can approach this of where skin picking came from. And I'm just asking myself now, because I didn't take any notes for this first episode. I just thought we'd just dive in and see what happens, see how it goes. So where to start? Where do we start? I'm feeling drawn to go to the beginning of time. No, I'm joking. I think that we should start back in our childhoods. Because learning how to regulate and manage emotion, we learned that in our childhood. We learned how to react to anxiety. We learned how to deal with stress. We learned how to deal with anger and sadness in our childhood. We either learned how to deal with it or we didn't learn how to deal with it at all. Because children don't know how to regulate their emotion. They must learn that from their primary caregivers. And when we don't learn that from our primary caregivers, that looks like when we're crying, or that looks like when we're angry and we get told to go to our room. So we're left alone with that anger. It's when we're crying and we're told to suck it up. We're told, I'll give you something to cry about. That's shutting that emotion down. It's not showing us how to deal with it. It's not showing us how to process it. It's not respecting the emotion. It's shutting it down. And this isn't to blame anyone's parents or caregivers. They did the best with the tools that they had. And if you look back on the previous generations, emotional regulation wasn't a thing. The thing was to suck it up, shut it down. Emotions are weak. And so we are now of a time when we're starting to learn the importance of feeling our feelings, of the importance of not suppressing but expressing our emotions, of realizing that emotions are where and how we set our boundaries. And it's actually how we experience all of life. Fun fact. Emotions are actually your body's only source of communication from the outside world to the inside world. So from the outside world to inside your body. If we didn't have emotions, we wouldn't know how to react to the external world. So if you touched a hot stove and you didn't have emotions or feelings, you wouldn't know to pull your hand away. If you saw a snake or a spider and you didn't have feelings, you wouldn't know how to react to that. If you saw water or food in front of you and you didn't have feelings, you couldn't feel the hunger, you couldn't feel the draw to eat, you wouldn't act on it. We wouldn't exist as a species. So emotions are incredibly important. And now we're getting off track. Where was I? Essentially, emotions are just extremely important. And when we learn as children to suppress our emotions, this creates emotional pain. This creates emotional memories tied in pain, which then can lead to chronic stress and anxiety and overwhelm and discomfort and dis-ease in our day-to-day lives as adults. And when we're living in that kind of chronic discomfort and we don't know how to deal with the emotions or the things in our life that come up, then we need to find another way to deal with it. And we found BFRBs. Other people find gaming or shopping or porn or drugs or alcohol, cigarettes. We all find a way to cope. And that's also a really important point to acknowledge there, is that a lot of people with BFRBs feel like they're really weird or it's abnormal and no one else does this. Actually, practically every human being does some version of a BFRB. Some are more socially acceptable and recognized as others. BFRBs are not so understood. So getting back to the emotions. When we don't learn how to experience and express our emotions, when we don't learn how to feel the full cycle of emotion, because every emotion has a cycle in it. And normally, what happens as children, we stop them in the most painful part of their emotional cycle and we shut it down. So the most painful part of feeling anger gets shut down. The most painful part of feeling sadness, shut down. And that's the part of the cycle that we get stuck in, the most painful part, which is why we want to avoid that in the future. We don't want to experience that pain. And so we shut that down. We shut the part of ourselves down that feels that, or that we might risk feeling that. And this creates a disconnection within ourselves. And in this disconnection, there is this gap between us and our emotions, this gap between our true selves, our authenticity and our emotions. And in that gap is pain. And we fill that gap, that void, with things that help us to soothe. That's obviously, you probably recognize it already. That's where BFRBs fall in. That's where all addiction falls in. And so when you think about it, to heal from a BFRB, it's not to remove the BFRB, because what happens when you remove the BFRB? You're just exposing that pain. And if you haven't started working on ways to reconnect and to soothe yourself and give yourself what you need to express your emotions, to shape a life that is nurturing, then you're removing the BFRB, exposing that pain, but not leaving yourself with tools to fill that void, to start soothing that pain from a really core level, which is why we often end up relapsing when we try to, quote unquote, just stop. And I really hope this explanation is going to help you to have more compassion, understanding, and patience for yourself on your healing journey, because we can get so frustrated with ourselves when we know this thing that we're doing is going to create more pain. Why can't I just stop? I know exactly what's going on here. I know exactly what's going to happen. I know the pain it's causing. I know how good my life would be if I didn't do this. Why can't I just stop? And we can really push ourselves so deep into a hole. We can be so hard on ourselves and keep putting ourselves down and making ourselves feel small and weak and incompetent, when in reality, what's happening is we're just trying to survive. We're just trying to cope in the best way that we know with the gap, that's with the disconnection that is inside us, the disconnection that is from our authenticity and our emotions and the person that we show up in as in our life. And this compassion understanding is so important, because healing from a BFRB or any addiction takes some time. And if in that time that we're trying to heal, we are constantly putting ourselves down and disappointed and frustrated and forcing ourselves to do something that maybe we're not ready to do, or not allowing the flexibility of making a mistake, then the road is going to get real, real hard. And it's going to be real, real hard to stay consistent and to follow through and to pick ourselves back up again. But just imagine you allow yourself the space to make a mistake. You understand that if a relapse happens or if the urge comes up, you understand that it's coming from a core need. It's coming from this disconnection. And what you need is connection of some sort. And this is really the work that I do with my clients, which is in the reconnection, which is in the looking at their lifestyle and asking, hey, and exploring and seeing, where is the disconnection? Where is your lifestyle not nurturing you? Where is it not in alignment with your authentic self? How is your lifestyle not meeting your needs? And that can look like having a job that you absolutely hate. That can look like not eating in a way that is nourishing your body. That can look like not taking a break for yourself. Just on go the whole time and not allowing yourself to slow down and do something that you just enjoy for you. Because your life, you are the only one living your life. And if you don't give yourself anything that's there just for you, just a gift to yourself and say, hey, look at all the work you put in. Look at your existence is just incredible, the fact that you're here. So let's do this thing that just you enjoy. And when we start to see in our lives, they're like, oh, wow, okay, that's not working. And then we start to take little steps. And I really mean that, taking little steps to create that change. Then we start to build a life, an external life around us that is really nurturing, that feels good, that's rewarding, that gives us a sense of satisfaction and fulfillment and makes us feel good about ourselves, essentially. And imagine when you have a lifestyle like that, and that's not to say life needs to be perfect. There's going to be hardship. There's going to be things that we do in our life that we don't really want to do, but it's just necessities. So life doesn't have to be perfect, but when our baseline lifestyle is nurturing and something that makes us feel fulfilled and good about ourselves, then life is going to get easier. And then we also, this is a big one to address. There's also looking at your mindset. And mindset isn't the only thing, but it's a big thing. So it's like perfectionism, the all or nothing mindset, the victim mindset. How are these things holding me back? And in what way? So this is something that I talk a lot about in my free online program, which is the Cold Turkey Challenge. And that is the all or nothing mindset, because that is self-sabotage in a nutshell. Basically, what we're doing with the all or nothing mindset is we're saying, hey, I'm going to go all in. And if I don't keep this standard of all in, then I failed. And I reckon you probably recognize what I'm saying here, because this is something I think most people do or have done, or they're working through trying not to do anymore. But the all or nothing mindset is self-sabotage, because we're afraid of the change that's going to come if we do stay consistent with that thing. We're afraid of the success we're going to experience. We're afraid of maybe failing, truly failing, even if we do stay consistent, and how much that's going to hurt. And so we'd rather sabotage ourselves, so we're right back at square one, so we don't have to experience, we don't have to risk anything. Because all or nothing, you're not risking anything when you go all or nothing on something. Because inevitably, you're going to fail, because that's what you're setting yourself up for. And so you're not going to actually do anything. You're going to fall back into your comfort zone, essentially. That's what we do. We fall back into our comfort zone. We realize, well, that didn't work. That sucks. I couldn't keep up. I wasn't consistent. I missed a day or a week. And man, I just suck. And we fall back into comfort. We fall back into what's familiar. The all or nothing mindset says, I need to go all in. And if I stumble, if I fall off the wagon once for one day or one week, then I suck and I've failed and no point in going forward. So that's a mindset aspect of something that's holding you in skin picking, something that's holding you back. I guess the picture I'm trying to paint here is the BFRB is not the main issue. it's not the thing that needs to leave for life to get better, because you could take the BFRB out of the picture. You could remove it and never do it again. But that's not going to change that all or nothing mindset. That's still going to be there. There's still going to be that self-sabotage and the frustration that comes with that. There's still going to be the lifestyle that's not nurturing. There's still going to be that job that you hate. There's still going to be the crappy food that you're eating, or the lack of exercise, body movement, or the toxic relationships. There's still going to be the emotional suppression and that disconnection. And so if you just try and, what we often do is when we think of how good life is going to be when the BFRB is gone, we're seeing a life where all that pain is gone, where we're just more confident, we're happier, everything is easier. And while a bit of that might be true, life would be nicer without struggling with your BFRB, especially if you're damaging your physical appearance and people can see that. The fact is that life is not going to have a huge transformation if you are able to just eliminate BFRBs from one day to the next. Now, in saying that, if we truly do heal, if we go from a bottom-up approach to healing from skin picking, that can definitely be the case. It's just often what we want is we focus so much on the end result and we crave that and we want that so bad, and we miss the work that goes into creating that reality, which is the small micro steps in our lifestyle, changing that so it's more nurturing. It's learning to the emotional regulation and expression and becoming more resilient to uncomfortable emotions like anxiety and stress and overwhelm. And it's in changing and working on those limiting mindsets and beliefs that we have that are holding us back and keeping us in this comfort zone that isn't actually that comfortable. Because skin picking is a tool, it has a purpose. And so yeah, definitely there are some aspects that will be better. So if you pull at your hair and you have patches, bald patches on your head, or if you pick at your skin and you can see the scars and pigmentation, of course, I really want to acknowledge that, of course, if you didn't have those physical, what's the word? If you didn't have that visible physical damage to your body, then yeah, of course, it would be easier to feel confident. It would feel good to have not have bald patches, or to not have that pigmentation and scarring, and not think, hey, what are people going to judge me? What are they going to think? Of course, it's going to feel better for that not to be there. And so eliminating, if we could just wave a magic wand and the behavior was gone and all signs of that behavior were also gone, then yes, that would feel good. It just doesn't mean that it's going to transform every aspect of our life. And I know some people are thinking, well, it would be great to work on those aspects of my life without this. It's just, if we didn't have a BFRB, we would have some other form of addiction. That's just how it works, because we need something to fill that void. And if it's not a BFRB, it'll be something else. That's why when people say, hey, I don't know what to replace the behavior with, it's like, because there's no replacement. There's nothing. It's like, if you have, and this is something I say a lot in my masterclasses, it's like if someone's an alcoholic and they say to you, hey, I want to stop this. I want to recover from drinking. And then someone says, well, why don't you just replace alcohol with something else? Like, what would you replace it with? Drugs? You can't replace the thing that you're addicted to, because the purpose of that addiction is to help soothe the pain of that disconnection and that void. And so the only true way to heal and let go of addiction is to start filling that void with real things, to start connecting with yourself, to start creating a life for you that's nurturing, to start feeling how you feel and setting boundaries and respecting you as an autonomous, amazing human being. It's about cultivating healthy relationships that are reciprocal of compassion and love and care. So what we don't want to do is replace the behavior. There is no replacement. And this is where cognitive behavioral therapy gets it wrong, and why that doesn't get people results that they actually want. Because you can't replace the behavior. And making it hard to engage in the behavior isn't going to make it go away, because the core need for that soothing is still there. A lot of CBT is focused on, what they focus on is fidget toys and covering mirrors and gloves. This is my understanding of it. Of course, it goes deeper than that. but it focuses very much on the surface level, which is the behavior itself, which is a symptom of the disconnection. So when we're just focusing on the symptom, we're not really getting to the root cause. We're not creating real life-changing change and transformation. I'm not saying CBT is bad. It's an incredibly powerful method. It's just not the right method for someone trying to heal from a body-focused repetitive behavior, at least not in the beginning. When we go through the process of healing and we have gotten to a point with our BFRB where the shame is gone, we are able to control ourselves, we're able to anticipate, we're able to see where the urge is coming from. And when we can say, I no longer struggle with this body-focused repetitive behavior, that's when CBT, when done with intention and focus, can be highly effective. Because that's when we want to start rewiring our brain, because there is an aspect of skin picking where we have neural pathways that lead us to pick our skin. We have neural pathways that say, hey, when you feel this way, this we pick our skin. And at some point, we want to start to rewire our brain. And so when we've dealt with the root causes, when we've really worked on that, when we've gotten to a stage where we don't struggle anymore, when we really feel in control, then we can say, hey, I don't need this behavior anymore. And we can really start to rewire our brain to not go towards skin picking every time. And that looks like making the behavior harder to do. So it's like with any bad, quote unquote, bad habit. One of the ways to stop a bad habit is to make it harder to do. So that looks like covering your mirrors. That makes it harder to engage in the behavior. It looks like wearing gloves, which I'm still not a huge fan of. I don't really like the idea of wearing gloves, but I'm open to it in this context. That looks like putting that gross nail polish on your nails or getting fake nails. It looks like putting dim lights in the bathroom rather than having those bright, white, horrible lights. When we make the behavior harder to do and we don't have a deep need for that behavior, which is coming from that disconnection, when that disconnection is no longer there, or it's at least at a level where it's not causing chronic discomfort and pain in our lives, then making the behavior harder to do is going to teach our brain, oh, that behavior isn't as rewarding as it used to be. Don't really feel like doing that. It's annoying. And so our brain is going to start to rewire to something else. And that's when we can start to redirect ourselves to do something else instead of engaging the behavior. It's like if you have a broken light, every time you walk into that room, you're going to subconsciously, automatically switch that light on, even though it doesn't work. And I have a great example of this. My husband broke our bedroom light about a year ago, and it was only fixed about a month ago. And regardless of that, regardless of the fact it was broken for about a year didn't change the fact that every single time I walked into the bedroom, I switched that light on for 1 year. Now, I know if I had made it harder to switch the light on, if I had put reminders somewhere on my door or anywhere that the light is broken, I would have eventually learned not to turn it on. If I had put the effort in to rewire my brain not to switch the light on, I would have stopped switching it on. It's just because I never bothered, because it's not such a bad habit. And the light was fixed now. The light was going to get fixed at some point. So, but that's just a great example, because I didn't have a great emotional connection to switching on a light switch. There is some emotional connection there. You know, we get a sense of relief when we switch the light on and we can see what we're doing. It's frustrating to be in the dark and not be able to find something. That's what's the motivation to want to turn on the light switch and why it turned into a habit. But because that switching on the light switch wasn't filling a void, it wasn't filling any disconnection, then it's very easy to change that behavior. What I could have done is put a sign on my door to remind me, hey, light switch isn't working, just to wake me back up, come back to my conscious brain and say, oh, okay, I don't want to do that. I don't need to turn it on. Maybe I would have put a weird texture on the light switch, like, I don't know, Velcro or something, to remind myself with a physical touch, oh, right, yeah, don't turn that on. I could have just sticky taped it, put tape over it so you can't even switch it on. And eventually I would have learned, the neural pathways would have been remade, I don't know exactly how that works, to not switch it on. Which, when we get to a point with skin picking, where we no longer have that deep emotional need, the soothing, where we don't no longer need that soothing, then we can start to do that work. Then things like CBT will start to work because we don't have that dependence. We're not dependent on skin picking to help us soothe the disconnection and the pain in our lives. Now, I just want to say, when we go to do this method, when we go to do this CBT approach, we really want to do it with intention. So if you want to cover your mirrors, don't just cover them and say, let's see how long it takes. Cover them for 3 months' time. Set a time frame to really focus and give yourself a goal and say, hey, these 3 months, this is what I'm going to focus on. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I want to get out of this. Really set the time frame and the goal and what you want to do in that time frame. If you want to get fake nails, get them with intention. Say, hey, I want to get fake nails for 3 months. This is what I want to do. This is what I want this to help me with, what I want to get out of it. Really set the intention and the goal so you're consciously aware of why you're doing it and what you want to get out of it. Because we can just do these things and just hope. But that doesn't get us the results that we want. Then we're just hoping that this thing is going to fix it. But we need to be actively in the process. We want to be consciously aware of the process and want to be reminding ourselves of what we're actually doing in that time. So if you're at a point in your healing journey where you don't feel like you're really struggling with the behavior anymore, but the urge still comes up and you still find yourself scanning subconsciously, or you end up in the mirror sometimes, or you still feel the pull to engage in the behavior, but it's not something that takes over your life and you're able to stop yourself. And like I said, you don't feel, you can really say, hey, I don't struggle with it anymore. It's just this thing that I still do. It's kind of a bad habit now. Then this is the next thing for you to do. Just do it with intention. Now, if you are not at that point yet, and most people are not at that point because of the lack of information and support out there for people with BFRBs, most people don't even think it's possible to heal from a BFRB, which is insane. And this podcast, I'm starting this podcast to help those who don't believe that, who want to believe it's possible to heal, and to give you the information and the knowledge and the tools to help you do that. Because there is no reason why you shouldn't be able to heal from a BFRB. There is no solid evidence to suggest that it's not possible. The only reason why people describe it as a chronic illness is because of the lack of understanding out there, the lack of understanding that it's a behavioral addiction. I mean, if you talk to a friend who's an alcoholic and they say, hey, I want to heal from this, I want to get over this, would anyone say to them, hey, maybe you just need to learn how to live with it? Is it even possible? Do you think it's possible? Maybe it's just like something that you do and you just got to learn to live with it. No way you would say that to someone. If someone had a gambling addiction, if someone had a gaming addiction, if someone had a shopping addiction or a porn addiction or a food addiction, and they said, hey, I want to heal from this, would you really say, hey, maybe you just got to learn to live with it? No, you wouldn't say that. It's ridiculous. But it's also because we understand those addictions better. We know them better. We actually view them as addictions, whereas BFRBs are not viewed as addictions because they're so poorly understood. And so when someone says, hey, I want to heal from this, I don't want this in my life anymore, I don't want this, we say, well, most people really find that hard to do. And from what we've seen, it's really hard to do and most people don't do it. So we're just going to assume that it's not possible. And that assumption is really hurting a lot of people. It's hurting this community. It's holding this community back from the healing that it deserves. It's healing. It's holding you back from the healing that you deserve, because it is possible to heal from an addiction. And understandably, BFRBs, they have their own set of challenges. And that isn't to say that it's going to be easy. That isn't to say that it does take work. It takes commitment. It is possible. That's, really think about it. Why would it not be possible? Why would you be the one person with the one behavioral addiction that can't heal? I've seen people heal. I've helped people heal. You are not the one person that is cursed with the one thing that you just can't heal from. And the thing is, there's a lot of social media pages out there of people who are struggling with a BFRB. And they found that the furthest they've gotten is through acceptance. And, you know, that's also a super important part of healing, is learning to accept yourself, learning to accept the struggle, learning to accept where you're at. The acceptance is so powerful, because with acceptance, we stop shaming ourselves and putting ourselves down. Now, a lot of people, when they get to this point, they stop there. And this is because there is so little understanding and information and support for people who want to go further. But they stop there. And they think, because this helped me and this is where I'm at, then that's probably as far as anyone could go. And they're doing it from a good place. They're doing it from a heartfelt place, saying, hey, it's not possible to fully heal and it's okay. You just need to accept it. And that's part of the process. And even though this is coming from a loving place, it's actually really damaging. Because just because your experience in life does not determine someone else's experience. Just because you can't do something doesn't mean someone else can't do something. Have you ever wanted to try something and someone said, well, no, I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think you're gonna like that. I don't think that's for you. And then you go and do it anyway. And you're like, actually, I was awesome at that. Or I love that. Or that's so for me. It's because you determine your reality. Just because someone else thinks that that thing is impossible or you can't do that thing doesn't mean that you can't. There's nothing set in stone about healing from addiction. And when you really understand where addiction comes from this disconnection, from that pain, from that void that we have inside us, when you really understand what it takes to truly heal, the steps we need to take, it starts to make a lot of sense. You start to see things in your life that are just simply not in alignment with you, with what you truly want. And when we look at healing from addiction, from BFRBs, from this perspective, we start to see that what it takes is growth and the courage to grow and push ourselves and to step out of our comfort zone, to face our fears, to turn inwards and reconnect with a part of ourselves that we've hidden away, that we have forgotten about. And there is no limit to what you can do there. There is no limit to your growth. There is no limit to what you can reach within yourself. And so why put a limit on your ability to heal from a behavioral addiction? Why put a limit on your ability to heal from anything? Don't allow the limitations of other people to hold you back. It's not like healing from skin picking or hair pulling or cheek biting or nail biting. It's not like healing from them is saying, hey, I want to jump from here to the moon. That would be impossible. That would be an impossible feat. Or it's not like saying, hey, if you've chopped off your arm, hey, I want to grow my arm back. That, yeah, that's not possible. That's logically, physically not possible. But healing from an addiction, healing within yourself and growing as a human being is absolutely possible. And that's what it takes to heal from any kind of addiction. Or at least it's a huge part of what it takes to heal from any kind of addiction. And BFRBs are no exception. So I wanted to talk to you today about where BFRBs come from, and we've done that. And I hope that has given you some deep insight and some understanding, compassion, and patience toward yourself. And the reason why I wanted to share this with you is to also give you the hope and the understanding that you can absolutely heal. There's no reason why you can't. You determine what you're capable of. And you are capable of some incredible things, trust me. And that's what we're here to do on the Untapped Potential podcast, is to untap your potential for healing and whatever else you want to achieve in your life. So I think this is a really great place to finish the first episode of this podcast. I don't actually know how to finish a podcast. I meant to Google that before, but I forgot. I just thought, let's dive in. Doesn't need to be perfect. Just do it. Just do it the first time. Have fun. That's what we're here to do. Here to have fun and learn and connect. What I would really love is if you appreciated this podcast, you enjoyed listening, you learned something, I would so love it if you could leave a review, hit subscribe, or whatever, you know, whatever buttons are there for you to like, hit subscribe or review, please go and do that. I would love your support, and it's going to help me reach more people, and it's going to help this message that I'm trying to spread to reach more people. So thank you for being here. I've thoroughly enjoyed this, and I hope you have too. And I will see you on the next episode of the Untapped Potential podcast.